To all members of the committee, we are also circulating the register for everybody to register their presence in this meeting, and we are also trying to connect to the laptop for the department to make it easy for the delegation to can present their documents easily. And I hope all members have received our proposed agenda in front of them. Has everybody received the proposed agenda? Yeah, it looks like everybody has. Then the next item on the agenda will be the apologies, if there are any. And from the secretary's side, there's an oversight. They didn't invite the minister. We were expecting the minister to be here or the deputy minister, but it's just one of those issues that we are trying to oil our machine so that it functions much better than we do. But in future, we'll make sure that in all our briefings, presentations, or anything, in any interaction that we are making with the department, there is the minister. The minister is invited, or the deputy minister, so that we can get more information and understand some of the policy issues much better. Apologies. Do we have any apologies? Marcel?
From Masaki.
Can you use the nearest microphone, please?
Chairperson, we have an apology from Mr. Gunda and Ms. McCarthy.
Okay. Members, do we accept those apologies? We have two apologies that they accepted by the committee. Yes, Lydia. Oh, okay. Sorry, member Mshuti.
Thanks, sir. You know, I'm really amohed.
Okay, there's a proposal seconded. Seconded by Member Mube and Member Broughton. And the next item will be the introduction by all members that are present in the meeting. Can we start with the honourable members of parliament? I will start with I'll swing from my right then to my left.
Sugiswa Rantho, member of the select committee. Kelebo Mjula Stulo, Kilidia Wahamushudi, Kiswa Free State, select member of the select committee. Thank you again.
Honourable Chair, I'm Khalif Mashamaid, a member of this Select Committee on Social Services, and I'm also a problem person. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Siko Plaki. I'm representing Northwest Indian Showcase, member of this Select Committee.
The Omar Rota, member of the committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Pinky Mube from Houghton.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mrs. Mukadla, House Chairperson Committee and a member of this committee. Thank you.
I'm an observer from the PNG. Thank you for having me.
PNG.
My name is Monica Simpi. I'm in the Ministry for Health, Deputy Minister.
Good morning. My name is Mufimi Sene from the Deputy Minister's Office.
Good morning, my name is Prince Mashati, I'm the Deputy DG National Department of Health.
Tomlinson is Director General of Health. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Kirby?
Good morning. I'm Kirby Lekeja, the Research Office Committee.
Good morning. My name is Chulisile Ganyaza Swano, the content advisor for this committee. Thank you.
We have a gentleman behind on the screen. We want to know everybody in the room.
Sorry, I'm Carl Collison, also from TNG.
Thank you.
Jillian Hendricks, 7-8.
Thank you very much.
Okay, honorable members, at this stage, I think I will take an opportunity to allow the Department of Health to make its first presentation, which will be, I don't know how have you structured your presentations. Let me hand over to the DG.
Thank you very much. I'm just trying to raise my concern in relation to documents that we have just received now. And I had an opportunity to ask the Secretary of the Committee as to why are documents. She said she interacted with the department during the course of the week, and the department didn't send those documents. And in my view, it is important for the department to avail documents 7 days before the meeting, or even 2 weeks before the meeting, so that as members are able to go through these documents, and in a meeting, we contribute meaningfully to the department. And I will appreciate, Chairperson, if we can get the reason why documents were not sent in time to members, so that we can familiarize ourselves with the document. And if reasons which will be given here cannot be reasons which carries water, I will make a submission that for the department failing to avail documents in time, they undermine this committee. And this is a committee of parliament. We cannot afford that the department should undermine us. And yet, they want us to interact with them while they undermine this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashamete. Your friends, an important matter of the documentation. We all know the reasons of having documents before the meeting. It assists all members to go through the documents and definitely do that meaningful interaction with the department. Department, before you go to your presentation, can you please respond to the questions posed by the committee?
No. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. Perhaps we can start by saying to the honorable member, if the department is invited 2 weeks before time, then the department will be able to actually do that. So it would start with the processes of establishing a meeting with the department. If we are invited on time and we receive the invitations and also the requirements from the committee, we would actually oblige. We want to apologize for not circulating the document, because I think our confirmation of the meeting was only this week sometime, or during the weekend. Nevertheless, we take full responsibility, because we should have actually perhaps been able to circulate those documents. Also, as I was saying to the chair, one of the things that we are supposed to do is to ensure that our political principals who are actually accounting to this parliament are aware of whatever documents we send. And so if if the invitation comes to us, we have to first consult with them as to how they want us to approach the presentation to the committee, because we speak on their behalf. And therefore, I think perhaps we should find between our parliamentary office and the secretariat of the office of this committee some kind of synergy to improve matters. So it's not at all meant to undermine the committee chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that explanation, Gigi. I think the committee does accept. I can see the members of the parliament nodding. It's accepted. Yeah, we'll make sure also from our side the department is formed on time and the information reaches the relevant offices on time so that the information can reach all the members on time for them to do the necessary work they are expected to do. Over, Gigi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. By way of introduction, I've already alluded to the fact that as members of the department, we come to this committee, particularly on policy matters, mandated by our political principals to present to the committee whatever they feel there should be the presentation. And in that regard, Chairperson, I want to on behalf of the minister, pass on a message to the committee chair that the minister has actually not finalized the processes that have to do with the national insurance policy. The process with regard to those policy matters is that the minister is supposed to present a proposal on the national health insurance policy to cabinet for cabinet approval, so that it becomes the policy of government. So at this stage, that matter hasn't gone to cabinet yet. It's still being prepared for a cabinet memo. There are documents that have been circulating from outside government, which are being discussed in the public arena. And therefore, we don't really take responsibility as the department and the ministry for those documents. And therefore, at the stage at which that framework has been adopted by government, the minister has suggested that he will ensure that he makes the first stop at Parliament to be able to brief Parliament on that policy before it is actually publicly published for public engagement as such. So therefore, Chairperson, on the basis of that mandate, I would like to appeal to the Chair that the second item on the agenda be deferred until the Minister has actually presented this framework to Cabinet and it has been adopted by the Executive. Right at the moment, we don't have a policy on except the policy intention for the National Health Insurance. But the policy proposals are still to be presented to Cabinet, which would imply, therefore, that Chairperson, we would take only the first briefing, and Dr. Masati will lead us in that briefing on occupation specific dispensation. Thank you, Chair.
was that still trying to find the relevant flight. Oh, yes, Honorable Mashamai.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, we understand what the DG is saying, because for any policy to be a full policy, broader consultation must be made, including the cabinet. But maybe, DG, can you share with us as to whether you have any target date for the presentation of this policy to cabinet, because the relatives have adopted it. Do you have any target dates?
First, may I say to the Honourable Member that the Executive has not yet adopted any policy on the National Health Insurance. I think what I was suggesting is that there have been some discussions in the structures of the ruling party for the matter to be referred to government, and it's now in the hands of the Ministry. But the first step then would be for the minister to prepare a cabinet memo. And in my own understanding is that within the next 4 weeks, the matter would have served in cabinet, and cabinet would have pronounced itself on as to whether, therefore, it is ready for publication, for public consultation. So let's say within a month or so from now, give or take any other obstacles that may arise. The intention is that in the next cabinet cycle, it actually serves there. Thank you, Chair.
And then I try. Okay. Ready? Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I've got quite a number of slides, but I'm hoping that they're clear in the documentation that has been provided. I'll try and go through them, but basically the focus of the presentation, I will talk a little bit about the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Resolution 2 of 2004, the personnel expenditure review and its implications, which was conducted by DPSA in 2006. I'll deal with the objectives of OSD, and I think more importantly, explain what OSD is not, and then deal with the development of the proposals right up to the just sharing with you the benefits that the medical and dental professions have received. The reason for focusing on those two is because of the huge attention, you know, with that, you know, with those two professions. I mean, in 2004, basically, there was a resolution agreed with Labour at the Bargaining Council identifying health workers to receive priority in terms of introduction of a new remuneration dispensation. By then, it was not yet termed OSD. It was to look at how we could be able to improve remuneration of health workers, the reason being that we had identified that the health sector, public health sector, was bleeding, and we needed to address the challenges. And the major challenge that was number one was the question of remuneration. But it was not the only one. There were also issues relating to the conditions under which people work, the availability of medicines, equipment, and so on. And there had been scarce skills and rural allowances that had been introduced previously, around about 2001-2003. But part of the challenge we had with scarce skills was that they were very selective. The major beneficiaries were mainly the medical profession and a few categories within nurses. And by 2004, it was very clear that we're facing revolt from other, you know, professionals who felt that they needed to be declared as scarce, I mean, skills. Where the challenge was definitely within that they were scarce skills, and therefore they need to be treated as scarce skills.
Sorry, and it was really unsustainable because the amount that was available was not, you know, that much. So in 2004, what happened was that from the Department of Social Development, I mean, point of view, there was a directive that was developed, which was providing some relief for the social workers. However, we started in 2006 to develop proposals based on the outcomes of transversal job evaluations that were routinely done in the public health sector. In 2006, the DBSA conducted a personnel expenditure review and a new remuneration policy framework was then developed. This was done, I mean, through benchmarking, looking at a number of, I think we took four countries, the UK, Australia, and I think it was Kenya, I can't remember the fourth one, but there were two in the African continent that were looked at. One of the recommendations that came out of that was the development of occupation-specific dispensations for targeted occupations. Chair, what used to happen before is that we did an analysis in 2004-05 looking at what professionals were paid in the public service, where you found that a pharmacist, for instance, was earning less than an admin officer. Pharmacist with 4 years training, earning less than an admin officer, who's got a matric and maybe a 6 month or 12 month certificate. So clearly the situation was untenable. And one of the issues we raised was that even when we remunerate our health professionals, the approach that you take for each of the professions must relate to the nature of work that they are doing so that you don't take them to be the same, you know. That remuneration policy framework was approved in principle by Cabinet on the 5th of September 2007 and then referred to the Mandate Committee for finalization. What we're doing then, even before Cabinet had done the approval, was doing some legwork, you know, to make sure that from a technical point of view, elements of that policy framework were included in the 2007 wage agreement, which is Resolution 1 of 2007, which includes the principle of OSD. So OSD is not equal to Resolution 1 of 2007. OSD is part of that resolution. That resolution dealt with a number of issues, including the filling of posts in the public service, the correction of staff establishments, and so on and so on. And basically, then, what were the objectives of the OSDs now, the occupation-specific dispensation? One, it was to improve the public service's ability to attract and retain skilled employees. Secondly, it was to provide differentiated remuneration dispensations for the vast number of occupations in the public service. So it's not only in health. That is why you find people talking about OSDs in education, justice, engineering, and so on. Like I said, also to cater for the unique needs of the different occupations, you will see as I go along, I mean, what that means. And also to provide a unique salary structure per occupation, but also to prescribe grading structures and job profiles to eliminate the interprovincial variations. One of the challenges that we dealt with, one maybe that is well known, is that the emergency medical service personnel, the majority of those people are in the Western Cape. And the reason for that is because some few years back, the Western Cape decided to increase the salaries for EMS. There was a massive exodus of EMS personnel from KwaZulu-Natal to the Western Cape. And if you look at, doctors, for instance, you get somebody who finishes their computer service in Limpopo, then they get, they're supposed to be on salary level 9 in terms of the public service salary scale. But you'd find Northwest offering that person salary level 10 salary. So then people would just move across. So there were those, variations across provinces. So one of the things that we are bringing in is to remove you know, to try and remove that power from the provinces to individually determine salaries, because that is what is causing inequities, I mean, between provinces. To provide adequate and clear salary progression and career pathing opportunities based on competencies, experience, and very importantly, performance. If you look at the nurses, nurses will tell you that they're the ceiling at salary level 8, which was the chief professional nurse. You reach that ceiling, you know, I mean, going beyond that, it would be impossible. So what we then try to do was to try and rework so that the remuneration goes hand in hand with career pathing and very clear salary progression. Now, the reason why we were doing that was to make sure that, you know, people would find public service as, you know, very attractive from the remuneration plus, you know, a career pathing point of view. Just to make an example, in 1996, there was improvement of salaries of medical officers in the public service. But within 2 years, the same people that had their salaries revised were complaining that it's peanuts, what they were getting is peanuts. And part of the problem was that, you know, money was, you know, made available to try and solve a chronic problem, which is not necessarily a money problem alone. There were other issues that, I mean, we're trying to deal with, I mean, that we're dealing with now through OSD. So then we took a decision that says, put remuneration together with career pathing so that people do not necessarily outgrow their salaries without having gained enough experience, without having performed well, so that you avoid a situation where, for instance, in nursing, somebody qualifies today, they get employed in a hospital, and they will actually earn more than, you know, a nurse who's been working for about 15 years or so. So we're trying to solve those anomalies. So basically, this is just an illustration, you know, of what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do on the left, basically, that those are just the nominal, you know, figures. They do not represent anything, you know, I mean, really. Basically, what we're saying, that salary progression over time is that people come in, you say, around about value 10. For instance, if we take medical doctors, those would be your interns and community service. But to be able to retain them in the public service, then we're saying that there needs to be rapid salary progression. So that by the time they get to year 3 or 4, they are almost at around, you know, between 40 and 50, you know, I mean, in terms of the imaginary salary value. Then the graph tapers off later on. Basically, what we're trying to do is to say, if we can get these young guys, instead of after, you know, a year of community service, they jump to private practice, keep them in the public sector for about 4 to 5 years. I can tell you that, you know, in 4 to 5 years, your, what do you call it, English is a proper challenge, you know. Your expectations, you know, have modified so much. And I'm saying that because I spent about 4 years, you know, working in the public sector before I went to private practice. And by the end of that 4 years, what I was dreaming about after finishing my internship had evaporated. There were other, you know, things now that were more attractive to me, you know, to get involved in developing policy and all those kinds of things. So what then we're trying to do is to say, catch these guys, put them in for about, you know, 4 or 5 years. Then, after about 3, 4, 5 years, that's the time that many of them are thinking very seriously about specialization. And now you will actually see the way we've modeled it is that for the specialists, you know, we also follow the same route. Junior specialists will come in at a lower level, those that have just finished training. And by the time they finish about 4 or 5 years, their remuneration is really increased a lot. Of course, that the brakes that then we put on the salary progression at the question of performance, which means that people must be measured whether they're performing well or not. Secondly, they need to actually gain that experience and many other measures that we put in place. So, Chair, this slide basically summarizes what OSD is about, you know. To say that we want people in, they need to improve as they, you know, stay longer in the public service. And once you get to year 4 or 5, you know, you're actually having quite an experience, you know, professional. And, I mean, the principle is the same across the board, be they nurses, physiotherapists, radiographers, and so forth. Now, if you listen to my colleagues that have been doing a lot going on, you know, strike, you would actually think that OSD is an automatic salary adjustment. It's because people do not understand what OSD is about. And that is despite the many hours that I spend with the association explaining to them exactly what, I mean, it is. Like we say, it is a forward-looking plan to systematically increase salaries after predetermined periods based on specific criteria such as performance, qualification, scope of work, experience, and so on. For instance, one of the things we want to do is to engage private practitioners in doing sessions in hospitals. Previously, there was no differentiation. If you are a private practitioner, whether you've got, you know, advanced qualifications or not, I mean, you'll be treated the same. And the approach we're following is to say, if, for instance, you've got a doctor with a diploma in pediatrics, that doctor doing a session must have more responsibility than a doctor who just has got an MBCHB and is not advanced in training in pediatrics. Because, fortunately, with the health sciences, further qualification, you don't get further qualification without an improvement in practical skill and knowledge, you know. So those two are not separated, they're all together. So then we're saying that the question of experience, qualification, you know, and the scope of work will determine a lot how we remunerate people, whether they are full-time or part-time. And what we're hoping to do is that the more responsibility we give to those who are doing sessions, the more they will earn, ultimately we might be able to convince them to come full-time to the public service. So the OSD was really not intended to be an across-the-board, you know, a salary, you know, a adjustment. Now, just before 2006, we did a job evaluation of all the health professionals. And we then said if we were to increase their salaries just by one salary notch going up, how much would it cost, you know, a government? And it came to 5.3 billion rand per annum. And when we engaged with Treasury, it was very clear that that amount would not be available. Chair, some members might remember that the Minister of Finance, I think it was 2000 and beginning of 2007, said that Treasury had set aside 5.3 billion to improve the remuneration of health professionals over the MTF over a 3-year period. The bulk of the professionals thought that 5.3 billion is available for that particular year. So there was a big fight, you know, I mean, around that. But ultimately, even that 5.3 billion came down in reality to 3 billion over a 3-year, I mean, period. We were to squeeze everybody within that. We, as a department, we took a deliberate proposal to the National Health Council that we prioritize the nursing profession. We start with the nursing profession. Of course, there were many questions asked, why not start with doctors, why not nurses? And I would like to explain that the reason was simple, that there is no clinic in this country that does not have a nurse. There are very few, in fact, if you take the total number of, you know, facilities we have, maybe about 60% of them have got doctors. About 40% don't have doctors, you know. And the profession that was bleeding a lot was nursing. And what were the areas of bleeding? Specialized nursing, theater nurses, ICU nurses, and so on. And but far more importantly, nurse educators. So when the call for reopening of nursing colleges came up, one of the things we did was to do a quick audit, and we found that we don't have nursing tutors. Now you can have as many students as you have. You can have as many facilities if you don't have tutors. And tutors are not people that only qualified from the college last year and you put them to teach. You'll be taking a student to teach a student if you do that. If you want an experienced midwife, it's somebody who's done midwifery at least a full year, focusing on midwifery, and has been working in a maternity unit for no less than 3 years. Then that person can be able to teach, you know, a student. So these are the challenges that we had. And our view was that if you stabilize nursing, you'll start turning around, I mean, at the health system. The original estimates, you know, that we got in 2007 for nursing OSD was 1.458 billion rand in 1 year. Of course, we'd have to add the carry-through cost. Of course, there was over-expenditure, you know, of about 600 million or so, which is why some people called the nursing OSD a disaster. But part of the challenges were there were systemic challenges, like our data systems, you know, whether we've got the correct number of people, what exactly they are doing. And the other thing that's important in terms of the OSD, developing the OSD, we said OSD is not on a group basis, on an individual basis, which then means that you would say there is that Dr. Mahlatsi working there, exactly what is the nature of what he's doing, his qualifications, experience, and so on. You will not say the medical officers as a group, because that is what led us to problems before. So this, I mean, implementation had to be on an individual basis, you know. Which means that we say you are a nurse there, you've worked there, give us proof, you know, that you've got such qualifications, where you've worked and so on. To avoid also people, you know, cooking the system, basically. And we've managed to correct lots of problems we've had before. So in terms of Resolution 1, 2007, that is the broad wage agreement. Basically, what it was doing, it was providing for all those issues, I mean, that I agree. But I think more importantly, Resolution 1 of 2007, which includes OSDs, was not saying that you must pay these professionals so much. It was saying, actually, it's an enabling, you know, a resolution, which says, then go develop an OSD for nurses, for doctors, whatever. So when you hear doctors saying that they were supposed to get their OSD in 2007, it's not true. It could never be true. Because what Resolution 1 of 2007 was saying was that go and develop, and you follow what, I mean, I've put in there. Develop a unique structure pertaining to nurses first and implement within 2007. And that is what we did. October, November, we implemented. For doctors, then it was they were identified for 2008, and then the other allied groups were identified for 2009, July 2009. Like I said, we had agreed that, I mean, that's the path, I mean, I would follow. And like I said, then Resolution 3 of 2007 introduced OSD for nurses, and we backdated their payment from 1st July 2007. And there were indications that the projected amount would be insufficient due to the implementation challenges. One of the challenges we had, for instance, we took the data from PESAR, which pays every public servant in the country. And it showed that we had nurses, 96,800 and some odd nurses. But because OSD translations are on an individual basis, when we did the translation, we actually discovered that in the public service, we've got 105,000 and some odd nurses. So clearly, there was under-budgeting by about 10,000 nurses, which is why then we had such an over-expenditure. Part of the problems we had was that you had people employed, for instance, as nurses, but they are put against the post of a clerk or a porter, whatever it is, because what provinces were doing was that if they do not have enough posts to accommodate nurses, they will take any other two posts and put them together to give the salary, I mean, of that. And that is what, you know, messed up the system. And now implementing OSD, one of the things then that we're trying to do is to, you know, do away with that. Of course, there were a number of grievances, disputes, and legal processes which were resolved. Unions that raised 26 areas of dispute in March, and we worked very hard and resolved those by the end of July. Now, Resolution 3 of 2009 deals with the medical, dental professions, pharmaceutical, and EMS. And basically, you know, the objective, as I had, you know, indicated, I mean, earlier. But also what then we've done, we've identified certain categories of clinical managers, medical and dental, that are required in the system, you know. For instance, with big hospitals, you know, you would need, you know, overall, over and above the CEO of the hospital, you need somebody who will actually take care of the clinical areas, be they medical or dental. I mean, a similar approach was taken, I mean, to nursing, so that if those are profit, and that clinical manager for medical can only be a medical doctor. It can't be somebody else who's qualified in anything else, you know. I think this is just, you know, to, I mean, repeat what I've said before. And yeah, I just want to take, I mean, the last three, you know, bullets. Basically, what we then did, because there was a delay in the pay, in the agreement on the OSD for these groups, doctors, dentists, pharmacists, and EMS, and maybe let me say why there was a delay. Around about beginning of 2008, we're ready with the model. The model had been costed. Unfortunately, Treasury made available to us 500 million. Meanwhile, our estimates were that we needed about R1 billion. So already, we had a huge underfunding, I mean, of the program. And there was a to and fro between ourselves and Treasury. Even the previous Minister Barbara Hogan, you know, got involved in those discussions with Treasury. And, I mean, we're not able to go anywhere, because one of the things we did in introducing OSD was to say, let's take away the scarce skills, which was causing a lot of fights within the professionals themselves. Put that as part of salary and try and introduce, you know, the cost to employer concept, you know. Because part of the problem is that junior doctors would look at their pay slip, and when they say what government pays them is 6,000, they discount, you know, with the medical aid, but all the other benefits, you know, that they're getting, that if they were not getting, that 6,000 would maybe shrink to about, you know, I mean, 1,000, housing allowance and all those kinds of things, you know. So what we then said is that give them a package so that people can know what it costs the state to employ them. In that way, maybe they'll have a better understanding. Now, because of the delay, you know, from July last year, we've negotiated with Labour to say there'll be a once-off non-pensionable gratuity calculated at 5% of the current basic annual salary they have. So now we're busy, you know, calculating that so that people can be able to get that in their pockets. We could not do a back pay, because if we had done a back pay, the cost would actually balloon beyond what, I mean, we have. Emergency medical services is a serious challenge because it's not a very professionalized grouping. So the introduction of OSD was not only to stabilize but also professionalize, which is why then we're doing away with the short courses. You've got people that have been trained for 2-3 weeks, then they get on the ambulances that they would be able to go and save lives, you know. I mean, clearly, although they've played a role before, but we've seen quite a number of, I mean, mistakes, challenges, I mean, taking place. So we've introduced a new qualification, the emergency technician, which is a 2-year, you know, a training to try and improve the quality, you know, around that. But now, one of the challenges we have is that the lecturing staff, you know, in EMS was falling between the cracks, which is why then we've who are paying them, and are the only ones that were giving that lecturing allowance, you know, of 10% above, I mean, at the basic salary in terms of the OSD that we have. And also introduce a change in the pensionable composition of the total cost employer packages applicable to health professionals that are covered by the 70-30 split. Those are people that are on joint appointments between, you know, universities and the departments of health. Mainly you find them in medical schools and academic, you know, hospitals. That area is an area that we still have to address with the Department of Education from a performance point of view. So basically what we have here, you know, is that in terms of implementation, you know, like I said, is the 5%, I mean, of basic salary from June 2008, but that will be calculated as at 30th June 2009. And that payment is going to be done within 3 months of signing. That is to allow the provinces, you know, to quantify exactly, and also for PESAL to be able to carry, you know, I mean, that. Like I said, I mean, at the revised rates, you know, and so on. Now, there's been a challenge around the medical officers and the junior specialists, in that the medical profession has been complaining that, I mean, those are not adequately, you know, remunerated. So what we've done is that we've agreed that within the next 6 months, we are going to work at how we can be able to address, so that that graph I showed, you know, we can be able to really, I mean, adhere to that principle. We would have liked to do that now, but Treasury was very clear that there is absolutely no money. But part of the challenge we have is that of the 1.022 billion rand that we have, the medical and dental profession are taking 86% of that money. 10% goes to pharmacies, and only 4% goes to EMS. Now, that's a serious challenge, you know, if you look even at the role that the various, I mean, of those categories play. So what we've done then is we've ring-fenced the medical officers and the production specialists and some clinical managers, you know, so that we can be able to revisit that and deal with that in the longer term. In terms of the key aspects of the agreement, basically we are providing longer salary bands with higher salary ceilings from what we call production level upwards to allow for further salary grade progression. For instance, those who perform very well will actually have almost like a double notch progression within a 1 to 2 year period, versus those who are not performing well, who will actually take longer than to earn higher. Performance-based differentiated salary progression. This is one area that we have to negotiate with the profession. How do you judge the performance of a doctor? Some people think it's complicated, but I think it's easy. All it needs supervisors that are prepared to take decisions. I'll give an example. If you've got, you know, somebody who's an obstetrician and is running a maternity clinic in Mafikeng Hospital, all that you've got to do is to make sure that, you know, what we call the state theater, the roster is done. People are attending, you look at, you know, the clinics that are attended to, the rosters are properly done, you look at the morbidity, which means what cases come back that have got complications, you look at mortality, and you actually compound that on a monthly basis or quarterly basis, and on the basis of that you actually check whether the guy is performing well or not. And performance of those professionals has to be done by professionals themselves, so that we avoid a situation where professionals have been complaining, say, how do you get somebody who knows nothing about medicine to come and judge my performance? So these are the things that, I mean, we're trying to deal with. So that's why I was saying that OSD is not salary. Salary is a small part of OSD. There are bigger issues that we're trying to do to try and improve the quality of healthcare services in the public sector. And of course, there are things that, I mean, we need to address in future. But now the salary base for calculating benefits is higher because commuted overtime is a certain percentage of your basic salary. So if your salary before was, let's say, 20,000, and rural allowance is 15% of that, when we increase the base to 30,000, your rural allowance will actually increase by a comparable margin, because you'll be taking 15% of 30,000, not of 20,000. So that is the differentiation. And basically, these are just, you know, the summary of, you know, the substantial benefits that each of the dental the medical and dental professions, got. For the interns, they've really, got between 40 and 53% in year one. CompuServe is between 7 and, almost 19% in year one, and 6.1 going further. All those details, I think, are in the document. I'll therefore, just keep, these are just, details. I think here, what I would like to say is that bullet number 3, the proposal for the Arisen therapeutic group, those are your physiotherapy, speech therapy, audiology, radiographers, and so on. We've tabled that proposal, and it is with labor now. And labor will be consulting their members. We are aware that there is a delegation of labor from the bargaining council that is going on a study tour in Australia, if I'm not mistaken. And we've agreed that as soon as they come back, we'll resume the negotiations beginning of September. But basically, even for them, the principles are the same, To try and accommodate, the budgetary constraints, what we are doing with some of them is to say, can we implement over a two-year period instead of one year, so that the provinces can be able, to shoulder, the cost, and also make sure that, we are able to deal with those challenges, that we have. We've also agreed that, unlike we did with the nurses, where it was up to the provinces to implement, and there were whole lots of, problems that arose. People translated wrongly, and all that. So what we've agreed is that we'll do a decentralized, centralized implementation. I know that is that's a contradiction. Basically, what we say is that the implementation will be in the provinces, but it will be centralized. It will not be each district or each hospital doing its own translation. Basically, we're putting together a team between the National Department of Health and the DBSA, and we're hoping Treasurer will join us, and I will be leading that team to each province, where each province will get all the data, all the files of the health professional that they employ. And we'll go through each one of those and make sure that people are properly translated. That is to minimize the mistakes. There might be mistakes that arise, even during that. But we're pretty sure that we'll have minimized, those and deal, with them. Now, the other thing is that the translation that we're doing do not include possible annual pay progression. For instance, DBSA now is dealing with the general public service, cost of living adjustment. Over and above people getting that OSD, they're also going to get, increase. So, for instance, if you look at the registrar that got 60%, if you compare what they earned before and what they will be earning now, over and above that, they will be getting whatever, whether it's 6% or 10%, cost of living adjustment for general, public servants, as, agreed at the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. Chair, I could talk for about 6 hours on OSD. We conceptualized OSD in the Department of Health. We're the first ones to implement it, which is no wonder that we've got the most battering. all other departments have avoided the mistakes that we made. We made those mistakes not because we wanted to make mistakes, but were driven by the need to improve the conditions of health professionals in the public service. I just want to show now one, I'm not sure if you could be able to see that well. I'll try and indicate. For instance, if we look at, you know, here, these are the interns, you know, in that, I'll use this. The interns have got, you know, four options. You know, I don't know why that's indicating zero, you know. What it should indicate there is this. They've got four options where you find that there are interns that will not take up medical aid or housing benefits simply because they're still very young, they're staying with their parents. So they don't have to be renting or buying a flat, whatever. They're still on medical aid of their parents. Others would take medical aid at 50% contribution and then full housing subsidy. Others would take full medical and housing. Others, some provinces, what they did was to say that rather than having all these options, we'll just give you 37% in lieu of benefits, and there are no other benefits. That's additional to your salary. Which is why then you found that, you know, when you come to this total remuneration, people would be earning differently, you know. That is the system as it exists now. So what we've done then is to say, try and remove that, differentiation. So what you do is that you start all of them at a single package, you know, let's say of 228, and then you add commuted overtime. They will all, you know, be earning the same now. So if you are an intern, whether you work in the Eastern Cape, KZN, Northern Cape, you'll earn the same. It's no more the differentiation that is there. Because what has been happening, with my colleagues is that even though they know that they've made these options, you know, here, they would actually pretend as if they did not take those options and say that, no, look, they're poorly paid, because they would actually discount the pension, the service bonus, you know, that is there. And they know we're not, they would not actually talk about that, you know. So, we actually found that, that was a challenge. Now, this percentage we have here at the end, basically is comparison of what they earn now here versus what they earn there. Basically, what is the increase, you know. So people will not have the increase. Some of them will say, no, I'm only getting, you know, a 10% increase. But they do not say that they were earning higher than the one who's actually got 20% increase. So basically, I just wanted to show that because that is the dynamic that, we've had to deal with. And this, really goes to quite a number of, of them. And for the first time, when you deal with, when we talk about, specialists, you know, some of them are actually going, over the million rands, you know, package. Look at that. 1.2. That is the entry, you know. Others would be earning about 1.4, you know, a million. And our view is that for your top cardiothoracic specialist, for your top vascular surgeon, to retain them, you need to do that. Because if you get involved in a car accident and you sever your femoral artery, you know, the big artery that goes down your thigh, you know, I can tell you, you can't take a novice to repair that, you know. So we need those people. Training of health professionals, especially medicine. When I trained, you know, in the 80s, it used to be in the public sector. Now we're getting specialists trained in the private sector, you know. So salary is not the only one. We still have to deal with the issue of equipment, you know, availability of medicine, the funding of research by the state. Because most of those guys get involved in research. So if you don't fund research, they're not going to stay, you know. And I think, let me end it there, Chairperson. That's why I was saying that I could talk for very long, because OSC is in my blood now, you know. But I'll just leave it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dr. Masati, for that detailed presentation that you have just made. It is very interesting, and I hope the myths and also other things that members wanted to clarify and demystify are now clear as far as OSD is concerned. And I think at this stage we will allow members to make comments on the presentation. Member Nube has a floor, followed by Member Mashamaite, followed by Member Plaki. Yes.
And go I just want the department to share with us what are the implications of the insufficient funding given to the department by Treasury with regards to the OSD. Will you track the start of the implementation until the new financial year, or whoever is going to be affected to go back to the street again? Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, of course, Dr. Masachi can talk and choose the benefits. I was listening very attentively that you know, you are correct to say the OSDC are blackening your presentation of very much passion. Thank you for that, Dr. Masachi. Chair, my question is in relation to slide number, I don't know about the numbers of the things, where Dr. Masati's presentation talked about there were powers which were removed from provinces. I just want more clarity on that. What specific powers or the package of powers which has to be removed from the provinces in order to minimize mistakes which, you know, occurred during all this year. Just up to the issue of removal of power. But the second issue, Chair, is in relation to the rural allowance. I just want to check because our provinces, you know, differ from one province to another. The distances in the rural area. What barometer do you use to give those allowances if you do, you use barometer? Because that deep far rural areas, and that is where our people are suffering a lot in terms of, you know, health services. Just talk more on that as well, so that we can understand it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must also, you know, join my colleagues in appreciating the energy and the manner which you presented today, particularly clarifying the, you know, the difference between a salary and OSD, because this is the same mistake that even in the public are making. They just say, if you talk OSD, you're talking salary for people. So please, if you have clarified that this, to me, it's one of the key things that the public is confusing now, and even the workers. My question is on the performance evaluation tool. I want to check with the department, because you said the OSD is more specific on career pathing and performance evaluation, and that the professionals themselves must do that. So what I want to check with the department, do they have in place a tool that will assist in carrying forward performance evaluation. Because I noticed that in most cases this is one of the areas that causes confusion. So that you should not find that in an area there is only one person who is always being frustrated in terms of the OSD and others because of maybe the attitude between the, not the human thing, between the person evaluating and the person. You find that because normally it's not in my favorite and therefore even if she's doing so well, she would be frustrated in terms of the salary progression scale. So I wanted to check if there is a specific tool that will deal with that. Thank you very much.
Just one thing, I want to make a follow up on the issue of the implementation of the OSD within the 2 months, the target that you have set yourself, but within 2 months you should have started the process of paying the salary. Yes. Oh, the OSD, I mean to say. You know, you see, I'm making the decision. The OSD. In your own assessment so far, have you identified any hiccups or problems in the implementation of the OSD? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to start with the first one, the implications of insufficient funding. Basically, the problem of insufficient funding hits us when we've got to negotiate with labor. That is where it causes the delay. But what we have done, for instance, because Treasury had provided us with 500 million rand per annum for over 3 years, which meant 500 this year, 500 next year, plus the 500 carried through cost, that makes it a billion. Then the outer year is that billion plus, 500, you know. So what we have then done was to say, let us stagger, with the implementation. So that what we do first, we'll just do a straightforward translation. Then in the next year, we'll start now dealing with the recognition of experience, then you must give us documentation, and all that. Then in the outer year, we start instituting the performance measure. So that from a budget point of view, it would be, unfortunately, that is not what has finally, happened, because in the process, there's been some additional money that has been made available. But what we've tried to do is to make sure that we do not only look at the money that's available to kickstart, the implementation of OSD. Then the next thing, provinces don't have money for carry through, because that would be danger, in that. So the staggering, yes, it has been done. I think if, we had been given the funding that we have now at the beginning, you would not have seen strict protest. Because we would have been able, to deal with these issues, before. But of course, there were a number of, challenges, that were to deal with. So we are actually mindful that health professionals should not bankrupt the state because of the demands on salary, which is why we built in certain measures, like performance, and all that. Maybe let me deal with that performance evaluation too. Yes, we've got, a draft tool that we drafted. We had hoped that, as we negotiate, with professionals, we'll be able to discuss even that. But with the nature of things, you get derailed because we just had to fight the fires now, around strikes, what, and all that. And we were dealing, in fact, I was even saying that, I think the nursing organizations dealt with OSD better than the doctors did. Because nurses address the career passing issues, Doctors have not, they've just zoomed on money, and that's all, So, it's been a bit of a challenge. I think your comment earlier on in terms of understanding maybe point to another issue that you have not asked but I'll address, which is the question of communication to the public. As to whether, I mean, I don't think we're that effective in communicating to the public, but also one of the challenges we have is that to communicate such a complicated, I tried it, you know, discussing with some, to communicate something that is so complicated, you know, in its nuts and bolts is difficult. But what we had done was to issue some statements, you know, in papers and all that. And what we found after that is that a number of people started understanding that OSB is not on the salary. But I think, you know, maybe South African, something that makes our blood boil, you know, is what excites us. I mean, to see a doctor doing with a stethoscope, I mean, during the 80s, we never ever thought that we'd ever get that, you know, even though we had problems with apartheid government, but, I mean, abandoning patients and all that was never in our mind, you know. So I think, you know, with the focus, you know, but that's something that, I mean, we've got to deal with. I think on the issue of powers, you know, from provinces, I wouldn't say it's, maybe it might be in that respect as, I mean, powers, but is to remove, you know, the latitude for the provinces to decide that we are going to pay our doctors at this level, irrespective of what national is there. Because that is what causes instability. I mean, even with nursing, you get people that would switch jobs because where they are going to work, they are going to earn 800 rands more. I mean, to uproot your family or inconvenience your family because you'll earn 800 rands more and do some moonlighting on the side, you know. I mean, I don't think it's fair, you know. So what we've then said is to say that no province in future will, you know, on its own adjust, you know, a salary pay. If there is compelling need, then they will have to present that, you know, at the National Human Resource Committee. So that we can look and say, look, is it in line, you know, with the remuneration policy? What are the pressures, you know, because the pressures must be based on the health needs, you know, to be able to receive. The rural allowance, so we're not removing the powers as relating to the constitution, no, it's just that particular, you know, one. Relating to the rural allowance, one of the challenges we have is the definition of rural. And I scout literature, even internationally, there's no agreement of what it is that is rural. We currently use the Statistics of Africa definition, you know, of what rural is, because some people, like there was a colleague of mine working at, you know, a Mangweng hospital, who are saying that, look, I should get rural allowance, I'm in a rural area. Then, because I know the guy was my classmate, I said, but I mean, if you were somewhere in Jenfest, you know, what would you say? Because to me, Seshego might be, you know, a township, but I know that your house is in the heart of, you know, Buluba. And you can't tell me that Buluban is a rural area, you know. Same as Mutata, you know, friend of mine, you know, stays there. So I think the issue is that a province defined as rural might be in terms of the political connotation, or it could be, you know, the statistical, you know, approach and all that. But what had been done before was to leave the designation of a facility being rural or not to the province. So it's the province that would decide that the Buapom Hospital is, you know, rural, or, you know, what do you call it, Subengama Hospital, whatever it is. So it was not the national decision. But what you are trying to do is to try and do some kind of differentiation so that, because there are certain areas, no matter how much you pay, you will not get a doctor in that particular area. Now we've got to then reconfigure our service platform, you know, to actually say, does it become a community healthcare center? Does it remain a hospital? But some of these things are challenges because the public wants hospitals, If there was a hospital then they say it must remain a hospital, even if the imperatives have changed, you mean. Just like if there was once a missionary doctor there, they would want a doctor even if it's just a clinic, you know. And this does not happen in South Africa only. Canada is faced with the same thing, the UK is faced with the same thing. You know, so many countries in the continent, you know. Zambia, I know. I mean, the same problems that are facing. So what we're trying to do is to say the rural allowance needs to be changed, you know, so that it, I mean, for the people that would be residents. For instance, if you put somebody in, Mapulaneng, somebody would be a resident there, should actually get a better allowance than somebody who might be visiting but staying, I mean, an urban area. But some of the issues that we've got to look at in within that rural allowance concept is, the other non-monetary, non-financial incentives. For instance, some of the people say that, look, I've got a spouse who is a lawyer, and we get that a lot with community service. If you place me there, will my spouse get a job around there? You know, and that becomes a problem. Some people have got young kids that must go to school, you know. Friend of mine in the city has that problem, you know. Where do you kids go to school, you know, and all. Because the other thing that we cannot deny is that you're dealing with professionals, and like, it would be difficult, you know, for me to put my kids in the same school that I attended in Montreal, you know. Obviously, it would be in another, you know, a kind of. And that's the reality that we're dealing with, you know, and we've got to, you know, address that. Now, in terms of the target, you know, that 3-month period is for the payment of the once-off, you know, that once-off. Then the actual new remuneration, structure as we implement, we dependent on the readiness of the staff, because there are new codes that they must draft in, and they must test with dry runs, you know, and all that. But we are hopeful that within a 3-month period we might be able to do that. As I speak, my colleagues, my team, is having a meeting with PESA, so as to assess the readiness, you know, of that. And then in the next 2 weeks, we'll be, going around the provinces. I mean, from about 2 weeks from now, we'll be going around the provinces to actually check the readiness of the provinces so that once we implement. Basically, that once off within this, a short period, is just to make sure that people know that it's reality, they've got money in their pockets. Then, they will be able to then work out the other one.
Chair, can I add on 2 matters quickly? I think the first matter I just want to comment on is on the powers of provinces. Even though, in this context, as Dr. Makhlatsi was saying, we're looking specifically at how we ensure uniformity in the implementation of the HR policies. But there is an issue which is going to be an ongoing issue in the health sector as part of the review of the powers and functions and delegations in terms of the 3 spheres of government. Because, for example, we have a problem currently with the environmental health issue as related to the primary health care package as such. Dr. Makhlatsi was just asking us to approach the Health Professions Council, to approach the minister to say, let's grab for the time being this issue of community service for environmental health practitioners, because the municipalities do not provide for the post for community service. And therefore, as a result, we have a situation where those young people cannot practice as environmental health practitioners if they haven't done community service. And yet, they are not being given that of community service. Those are issues that relate to this issue of powers and functions and responsibilities. There's also discussion about whether we shouldn't lift the tertiary services, for example, to the national level. because if you look at what happens in the province, if there's a budget pressure in the province, the main issue for the service delivery platform is more primary health care and hospitals, regional hospitals. And so what happens is the tertiary hospitals then suffer, and yet they are the platform for advanced, as Dr. Matlatu was saying, for advanced medicine, research, and et cetera. So those issues are on the table, and at some point I'm sure the minister will come back and say these are the issues we've agreed, and therefore that's likely. So we'll be able to talk more about this issue of powers and functions at that stage. So that's the one issue I wanted to comment on. I think the second issue, Chair, around readiness, perhaps not only in terms of the 3 months period that is for this one-off payment, but as Dr. Mashati has said, part of this matter being in his blood is, also goes with the fact that he's also carried the responsibility for the failures of the system, which may not have been of his own making. One of the key issues here has been that in the previous implementation of the NERSES OSD, there was a whole range of variations of implementation in the provinces, some of them decentralizing it to the institutional level and others at the provincial level, and therefore uneven implementation and sometimes even wrong interpretation of a whole range of things, which led to, in some instances, to overexpenditure. So this time around, apart from just preparing for the 3 months, we should explain the concept of decentralized centralism, in that we would want to ensure that every institution, before we press the button for paying anybody, there has been some okay from a central point, so that we know that there's a uniform implementation of the process. So that's the preparation that we're doing at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, DG and Dr. Mashati, on the presentation. I'm not sure whether there are any other questions or comments from the members. Member Brooks.
Thank you. Let me join other sensation to the presentation, understanding what OSD is not. Because honestly, when we go outside, they ask us,
where is our money? You know, we want our money, you promised us. So, but according to this explanation, people really need this education. Dr. Masati is talking about performance, qualifications, scope of work, experience, etc. Now, I'm not going to talk about doctors. I'll talk about nurses. More especially saying that from the background from which we are, you find that there are those old nurses, you know, that entered the profession with a very low standard. And now, these people would want to maybe improve themselves in terms of qualifications. And we might have, as we have heard, you said that the tutors are not there, and we are running short of tutors. Maybe does the department have any plans of how they are going to go about with that, trying to get tutors? Why I'm raising this is because, as we know, there are these institutions that will now start advertising, knowing that there is a need for people to get, you know, qualifications. And will we have measures where these institutions will be monitored in terms of the content that they will be offering to our people? You know, so that they can they must be monitored in a way. We have such means. And maybe again, let me say, we have what we call recognition of prior learning.
coming to be our mothers who entered the profession long ago, and then those that are now maybe nursing assistants, I'm not sure of the categories, but I know they are nursing assistants and so on, if they want to go further, in terms of maybe trying to assist those people in getting a better qualification and maybe specializing, are you going to consider the prior knowledge that they have? No, let me start this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the first one is linked to the last one, the question of those that have been in the system. What we did with the nurses always do, we introduced what other people call a grandfather or grandmother clause, depending on how gender sensitive you are. But basically what it meant is that you will find somebody who has worked in a particular unit may not necessarily have the qualifications as they are required now. But in terms of the knowledge, you know, of managing, you know, in that particular area, not managing but providing clinical services, they've got a lot of experience. I'll give an example. I mean, when I did my internship at Macquarie Hospital, there was a sister there who was in orthopedics for about 10, 15 years. And that's the person who really taught me orthopedics more than the doctor was there. So what we then tried is to recognize those people and say that they will then be translated, you know, to within the state that's equivalent for those that have got qualifications in recognition of the services that they give them. But what we've encouraged them to do is to say, if you can, in the next 5 years, try and get a qualification, especially those that are still young. We do understand if you've got a 50, 55-year-old, you can't say they must go back to class, you know. So basically, that is how we then, I mean, address that. Also, you will know that there was what was called the bridging course, which allowed people that were staff nurses, you know, to do a 2-year training so that they can be get a qualification as professional nurses. Now, the nursing profession has decided, you know, that it needs to do away with that, but introduce a new measure. Because in terms of, you know, the SACWA framework and all that, all these qualifications need to articulate. So you cannot get people into a qualification that will actually close themselves, you know. But they need to have an opportunity to be able to, you know, to go further. What we are asking the provinces to do is to encourage people to study further by providing them with bursaries or stipends, whatever you call it. You know. Also, the Nursing Council has come up with new standard of practice, which will basically improve the quality of nurses that we have. For instance, in future, maybe in about 5-6 years, the person that is called a staff nurse there will be the person who functions at the level of the current professional nurse. The person that you will call, you know, a nursing assistant will be the person who functions at the level of the current staff nurse. That's the nursing profession that has decided that that's the trend in the world to improve the quality of nursing. So that even when people are in the rural areas, I mean, you know, they can be able to handle, you know, I mean, all the challenges that they get faced with. Now, the education qualifications have been reviewed. And I think most significant, one of the things we've done is to introduce research in nursing so that people can be able to do that, be it at, you know, at master's level or PhD level, because we would like to also promote the leadership in nursing by the nurses themselves. I'm sure the chair will remember, because that time she was still MSc, that when we were developing the nursing strategy together with the nursing profession. And that strategy is what is actually guiding the development within the, I mean, within the nursing profession. Now, in terms of, you know, the tutors,
One of the challenges, I mean, we've had with colleges affiliating to the universities is that universities have got certain rules. You cannot be a lecturer unless you've got basic, I think it's a master's degree. Now, if you've got a college that's got somebody who did that, you know, a three-year training, and then did that 1 year midwifery, maybe did psychiatry, experience for many years, got interested in nursing education, you know, has been teaching in the college. Overnight, the college affiliates to university, the university says they don't qualify to be a lecturer, you know. So those are the challenges that we're dealing with. So to try and deal with those, we've discussed within the department that we're engaging the Council on Higher Education, Nursing Council, Department of Education, about developing a college sector whose requirements are going to be less stringent than it is for universities. But those, that is the sector that will produce the bulk of our, you know, nursing. But the Nursing Council, together with other stakeholders, is debating the issue of developing basic qualifications for anybody who thinks they're not educated, so that you don't do a module and then you call yourself not educated. It must be instruction, you know, that is quite intensive. In terms of monitoring, you know, the mushrooming of, you know, nursing colleges, I mean, that are not registered. That is the function of the South African Nursing Council. What we do as a department, when they get reported, we inform the Nursing Council, we send inspectors, and if they're not registered, or what some of them would do, they would register, fulfill all the accreditation criteria and all that, a year down the line, just violate all those criteria. So that is what, I mean, the Nursing Council, that is why there's a moratorium on private nursing colleges, but we're hoping that the new council will be able to, I mean, to project it.
Thank you very much, members and the team from Health Department. On that note, I think we have to call it a day on this particular matter. And we thank the delegation from Health Department on the presentation that they have made to the committee, which has helped us to understand much better the issues of OSD as they unfold. And those members who were not around when we started the meeting, we agreed that the National Health Insurance is present to be done at a later stage where the cabinet is still dealing with it. We will be informed when they are ready. So that's the system. So thank you very much, you and your team. And we still have an agenda to deal with in front of us members. So let's take a 5 minute break and allow the members to make an introduction.